everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the SmackDown Summary here on Inside the Rocks. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always on the Blue Brand by Sondra. Some weeks we're happy, some weeks we're sad, and the weeks where we have to watch the main event of Jinder versus Randy, we are sad. Hi, Sondra.
Hi, Kenny. That's accurate. That is very accurate. I'm glad that we at least live in a world where Fashion Peaks exists, so that even when we have a Randy Orton versus Jinder Mahal main event, there is a bright spot on SmackDown Live.
So today, Sondra, very quickly, I thought I'd just tell all you and the listeners something. I don't know when this is going out. This is either going out on Wednesday night or Thursday night. If it's Wednesday night, then the Raw Rundown is maybe not gone up yet because David and I still need to record it because I was ill yesterday. And then I was going down to Newcastle to visit my friend Dan, and I couldn't handle the 45-minute car journey to his house. I had to just get a hotel because I was vomiting all
Which,
the time.
That sucks. Did you even get to see him then?
For 10 minutes.
Oh, man.
I just couldn't do the car journey. I had to go be sick in a KFC. It was grim.
Wow.
Anyway.
Yeah, that sounds unfortunate.
But I came back today, managed to get through the train journey, thank God. And I was coming back home, and I'm walking up the street, and there's this, like, queue of cars. And they're at the end of my street. And I was like, what's going on? And there's this man in his 50s on a bicycle who's holding up all the traffic by going round the corner insanely slow. Now, this is in the middle of Glasgow, and the guy's going really slow, and then this guy in, like, a Royal Mail post office van just starts screaming abuse at this guy through the window, just like, you fucking moron, move! You bicycle fuck! Right? And then the guy who's on the bicycle, and one of my favourite things I've ever seen, it's so Glasgow, turns his bike in a very slow pace to continue slowing down the traffic, and cycles over to the Royal Mail guy, and I think he's gonna stab him now. He's gonna pull out a knife and stab him. And he puffed out his chest, and he was all angry, and he got off his bike, and he banged the window, and the guy put the window down, and he went, oh, you! To the post office guy. The post office guy went, what the fuck are you talking about, mate? And he went, can you post this letter for me? And pulled it out.
That's amazing.
And the guy went, get to fuck, you cyclist prick! And and I laughed and went home. So
I love Glasgow so much.
Glasgow, Jesus Christ!
Miss that city.
So my
family's all asking me, like, so how was Scotland, right? Because like I saw my family the other weekend for mm-hmm. the first time since I was actually over, and I was like, yeah, it was good. It was really good. They're like, oh, what did you see? And I'm like, Glasgow, pretty much, because that's just where we were. And it's hard to explain to my family just how much I adore that city and how much I feel at home there.
It's a strange, strange place. But a good place, I think.
I think so.
This is episode number 55, Sondra, of the SmackDown Summary. So we are 3 episodes into the second year of this show. And we are on the road to SummerSlam. We're always on the road to something, aren't we? It's always car metaphors.
Apparently. It's always the fast lane to the road, to the roadblock, to the byway, the scenic highway of life, of wrestling. I don't know. They're really into driving. It's America. We drive everywhere. We don't do public transit very well.
Yeah. It's a thing. So we opened the show with a video package talking about Nakamura and Cena last week, and then the post attack by Corbin. So we start the show off with John Cena making his way down to the ring. And obviously, when you lose the opportunity to main event SummerSlam for the title, you like to do a wee dance on the way to the ring. Because that's what you do.
Of course.
If you're John Cena.
Yep.
So he comes out and he says he's fired up and blah, blah, blah. And he says, you know, you can create moments that last a lifetime. And he even makes a little jibe about, you know, Bret Hart being screwed in Canada. I don't know why they think that's a good thing to bring up for a babyface. But anyway, and then he gets serious, which is good, thank God, and says, you know, that Nakamura beat him and he's okay with that, and he wants to shake his hand and all this sort of stuff. So even though he was corny, he did get serious and sort of put Nakamura over, which is something,
he did.
I guess.
But it didn't even really sound like he was very sincere about it. And it was just all wrapped up in this recap of last week.
Oh, yeah, the sincerity of a rapist. Do you know what I mean? Like, there was no sincerity.
no sincerity whatsoever. And that bummed me out, like, because I liked the fact that he was putting over Nakamura and he was saying, you know, yeah, he beat me clean. That doesn't happen very often. Props to him. Like, he wasn't complaining, or, you know, he even pointed out the fact that it was clean. There weren't any, you know, ref bumps or, you know, blinded referees or crazy shenanigans. Like, none of that happened. Shinsuke Nakamura just beat him. And so I liked the fact that he brought that up, but he really didn't seem to care very much about it. It wasn't like, you know, this has taken away my opportunity to become 17-time world champion. He said something at one point. He's like, I thought I was going to waltz in and be 17-time world champion, you know, Jinder Mahal, whatever. So he's totally burying Jinder Mahal in this promo, which, you know, fair enough, Jinder's shite. But
even though the crowd chanted Jinder at one point.
Yeah, the crowd did chant Jinder.
Because he's Canadian.
Well, yeah, and also, this is just the strange world of SmackDown right now, right? Like, Jinder Mahal on top is a problem, but I mean, John Cena, it took him a while to get to any kind of point, right? Like, he was just recapping what happened last week. And I'm like, what are you on about, John? Like, I watched the show last week.
You also,
watched the opening video package that told me exactly what you're just saying for the past 2 minutes. Like, I don't know why we need this much recap. It felt like old pre-SmackDown Live SmackDown, where they used to just, like, recap what happened on Raw. I don't know. I was not a big fan of this John Cena promo, and I really didn't like it. I didn't like it at all. I was like, this is the corny John Cena that I don't like, because insincere John Cena is the worst, right? Like, I like when he's serious and sincere, even when he's like, hey, I'm Cena, and I'm going to beat you. I prefer that to insincere John Cena.
To be fair to John Cena, so we'll get to that in a sec. So then Baron Corbin comes out. He actually looks quite good with his mad black t-shirt jean combo. He doesn't look too bad.
What was his music?
Oh, his music's changed. I don't know what the hell it is.
I don't like it. I don't like it at all.
So he's changed. There's no more vroom vroom. And
I don't like it. He is my vroom vroom motorcycle wolf, and now he's not. And it's upsetting. Like, I said on Twitter, actually, because people were like, I think the old theme was better. And I do think the old theme was better, too. But do you think they had to tone it down to just, like, match Baron Corbin's charisma level? They were like, music's too good for him.
Maybe the music was above the station. Right. And it's funny, though, like, since Talking Smack's away, so is his charisma. Anyway. So he talks about, you know, he's tired of hearing about, you know, this, the respect and all that sort of stuff. He said he's the future. He's got no problem making Cena the past. And Cena said, you know, called him a dumpster fire, like the sign in the crowd. And then he said, you know, come down to the ring and let's get it on. I'll put you to another table. Corbin considers it. And he says he's got nothing to prove. And as he goes to leave, Daniel Bryan's music hits. And of course, the guy who's more over than the entire roster, the unable to wrestle general manager gets the biggest pop of the night, and he comes out and thanks Toronto, and then books a match between John Cena and Baron Corbin at SummerSlam. And this is the thing, like, I get why John Cena's not in any way excited, because truth be told, what he got at WrestleMania this year was shite, utter shite. I liked the story from The Miz's point of view. I thought The Miz and Maurice did great and blah, blah, blah. But for John Cena, like, let's look at it as if you're him. He wanted to be in the main event, or one of the main events, and he wasn't. He was in a mid-card match that didn't really mean much in the grand scheme of things. The match didn't really mean anything.
It was just for Total Divas.
It was just for Total Divas, yeah. So his WrestleMania thing this year was pointless. And now for SummerSlam, he's against Baron fucking Corbin? Like, I don't understand why John Cena's being shafted here. I don't understand
it's
why.
It's kind of baffling. Like, I mean, John Cena is still the biggest star in the company.
And they've not put him in anything. And the last thing he did that was major was the Royal Rumble with AJ Styles.
Mm-hmm. On pay-per-view, yeah. I mean, like, John Cena, Shinsuke Nakamura giving it away on SmackDown, I still don't have a problem with it, because I think if you want to get to that match and you're not making it your SummerSlam program, then
the
I'm glad that we got
is,
to see the match. But that should be the SummerSlam program, though.
The problem
is
you've
the
got,
thing.
Though, is the Jinder Mahal thing fucks all. Because he's
it
the
does.
Champion. So you're, like, you're shackled by that. At WrestleMania, it should have been John Cena and The Undertaker, not Roman Reigns. That should have been the match. And I don't think a lot of people would disagree with that. Because I think if John Cena had retired The Undertaker, I think that people wouldn't have had as much of a problem with it. Because people, like, deep down do respect him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that he would have been able to come across as more sincere in how he did it. And I think that I don't know. I'm not saying that people would have loved it, because I think most Undertaker fans would have hated the fact that he lost in his last one anyway. But that's kind of how you're supposed to feel on the way out. You know, like, it's not like if your favorite wrestler retires, you go, and loses, you go, yay, I'm so happy, you know? But, like, because I remember when Hogan...
It's supposed to be a tragic moment. Well, I don't know. I think John Cena versus The Undertaker would have been a better story, because it was basically like, this is my yard. No, it's my yard. And that was the story, right?
Also,
like,
it
wasn't that interesting. I think John Cena would have been more compelling. But I think the tragedy of it, I think it's more beautifully tragic since it was Roman Reigns. I kind of stand by it. I'm kind of into it.
And that's fine. But the problem, for Roman Reigns, it's great. For John Cena, it's not. You know, like,
for John Cena, it's not. If you're looking at it from John Cena's perspective, it's absolutely not.
And you know, like, what? Like, shouldn't WWE at WrestleMania be trying to create dream matches that people are desperate to see?
You'd think the same thing for SummerSlam, right? I mean, that's one of the things that baffles me about SummerSlam in terms of the SmackDown roster, is we had the opportunity for AJ Styles, Shinsuke Nakamura. We had the opportunity for Shinsuke Nakamura, John Cena. We had the opportunity for another AJ Styles, John Cena match. I know we've seen it before, but it's been fucking incredible every time. I would have been okay with another AJ Styles, John Cena match. We had the opportunity for, I don't know, Kevin Owens to fight Shinsuke Nakamura or something, right? Like, there are all these combinations of people on the roster that are possible for this. And what we're getting is Kevin Owens, AJ Styles again, which I'm more into after this episode of SmackDown, but still, it's them again, and they haven't really been lighting the world on fire. We're getting John Cena versus Baron Corbin and Shinsuke Nakamura versus Jinder Mahal. So none of those matches really scream blockbuster to me, right? And I know that they might not think that SmackDown has to be blockbuster given what they have going on the Raw side. I mean, that Fatal 4-Way is going to sell the show, and fair enough, it really will sell the show because that Fatal 4-Way is incredible, right? But it would be nice if SmackDown also had something to offer, and it just really doesn't.
I think that's the difference between Raw and SmackDown. Now, you know, even you have come around to this of like, yeah, I can't argue it. Like, there's more going on Raw, you know, like, even, like, the telltale sign is sometimes I'll go on, like, Twitter during Raw and Sondra's tweeting. Months ago, that did not happen.
I've been watching it.
Because, like, before you were like, I'm not watching it, I'm not doing it, I'm SmackDown all the way, and now even you're like, oh, fuck it, I'll just watch that one as well, because at least I get Braun on that. But I think the thing that's different, you know, even if I pull up the SummerSlam card right now, where we're talking, the thing with the Raw side of the card is that there's a lot of great stuff. And there's also people who are not on the card. Like, I mean, I know the Revival and the Hardys can't really happen now because of the injury. But, you know, you get matches like Bray Wyatt and Finn Balor, which looks pretty exciting. You've got the Fatal 4-Way, which looks tremendous. You've got Alexa Bliss against either Sasha, it would be Sasha Banks. Come on, let's be honest. So
it should be Sasha Banks. I hope it's Sasha Banks.
That's what it will be. You know, so you've got those three big matches that are happening, and then the SmackDown one, you've got Jinder and Nakamura, which is Naomi and Natalya, AJ Styles, Kevin Owens, which is the surface we should be frothing at the mouth for.
We've seen it be disappointing too many times.
The most exciting match on the SmackDown side is the New Day and the Usos.
New Day and the Usos, hands down. Like, there's not even any competition for that, right? The New Day and the Usos is definitely the best thing going into SummerSlam on SmackDown. Which, I mean, and I'm not trying to say, you know, any shade toward New Day and Usos, because I am genuinely excited about that program. I don't care if we just saw the match. I really, really loved the match at Battleground. So it was definitely the highlight of Battleground.
Thank God for that match.
Not that it had much to compete with on Battleground, but, like, it was definitely the highlight of Battleground. That was an excellent match.
I will say this, though. You know, obviously, John Cena, after SummerSlam, is on the Raw brand for a month. That's
right.
Thank God. Put him on the fucking Raw brand. Give him something good to do. But here's my fantasy booking. Do you know what I want to see John Cena do?
What?
And I don't think it's possible. What if in the Fatal 4-Way match at SummerSlam, Brock Lesnar retains, and in the pay-per-view after that, it's Lesnar Cena 3?
I think it might be, actually. Because they're both advertised for that pay-per-view, right?
Yeah. or Les has seen a four, I can't remember which one it is, based on this current run, but I would be well up for seeing them go one more time. For sure. Because
yeah, I mean, and that would be a huge match, especially for a non-Big Four pay-per-view, right? Like, because I forget what pay-per-view comes after
No
SummerSlam.
Mercy is.
No Mercy. So, I mean, that'll be a big selling point for No Mercy, which you wouldn't think there would be, right? Like, No Mercy, whatever, it's just a Raw pay-per-view, but that could be pretty exciting. I don't know if they're going to do it, but it would be interesting for sure. And if I think it's interesting too, because I mean, everyone seems to think John Cena's 17th title reign would be with the WWE Championship, but I guess it could be with the Universal Championship as well now, right? Because they consider that another world championship. So
yeah, it could be that one. So we'll see where John Cena goes, but I think you're going to see a coasting performance from him at SummerSlam, and I can't really blame him.
I mean, I can blame him, though. I can. Because if
he's
there...
What can he do with Baron Corbin, though? What's
well,
he supposed to
know,
do?
But I don't like the idea that a performer can just get away with it because it's beneath him. Like, he should be trying to elevate Baron Corbin. He should be trying to put in the
effort. He's not a medical worker.
Well, no, but I'm just saying, like, I don't like the idea that a performer can just be like, oh, well...
Here's an example. He worked with The Miz, who is incredible, and he didn't put in 100%. What do you think he's going to put in with Baron Corbin?
Oh, no, I'm not saying that he's going to put in the effort. I'm saying that he should. I'm pissed at him for how little effort he put into that Miz feud, because The Miz carried that. And I don't think that was excusable for John Cena. If you're going to be the top fucking star in the company, put in a shift.
Do you know the truest thing he ever said in that feud? Was, if I got what I wanted, I'd be standing here with The Undertaker right now.
Yeah, no, it's true. And I mean, that's when John Cena gets serious and gets sincere and gets honest about the fact that he is John Cena. Deal with it, right? And that's the John Cena I want to see. I don't want to see wacky John Cena. I don't like wacky
John Cena.
Do you know
what, like, I don't want to say, I don't want to encourage this. Not like John Cena's listening to this or anything, but...
Oh, he listens every week, I'm sure.
I wish that John Cena used some of his stroke. Because he's clearly not used any in a while, like... He should be saying, I'm not facing Baron Corbin at SummerSlam. It is beneath me. We need to find a bigger match. Because we should. Because essentially, you know, Baron Corbin should not beat John Cena at SummerSlam. I don't think there's any upside to that. I don't think it's believable that he beats him. I don't think that Baron Corbin's a big enough star to beat him. I don't think the story's good enough to beat him. He's just lost to Nakamura. You know, it would be one of for me, if I was booking it, I'd be like, yeah, Cena beats him, that's it. You know, because I just don't think there's nothing interesting.
I mean, it depends if you want to elevate Baron Corbin, right? And I mean,
I think if Baron Corbin
needs the elevation, like, he needs it more than John Cena does, for sure. I just don't know if elevating Baron Corbin is going to work, because I don't know if Baron Corbin is a capable enough performer for it.
I don't think he's there yet. I don't think he's where he needs to be to be elevated by John Cena. But we'll see.
It might help, and it depends how Cena reacts to it as well, right? If Cena doesn't take Baron Corbin seriously, and then Baron Corbin beats him, and John Cena doesn't take the loss seriously, is that really elevating Baron Corbin? I don't think so, and I think that's how John Cena would play it out.
If John Cena's going on to the Raw side for a month for a big match, is he really going to walk in after losing to Corbin? I can't see it.
I mean, he might, though, Kenny. I mean, he's John Cena. He can walk in and do whatever he wants regardless. I mean, he just lost to Nakamura and is still coming out to call the shots.
Yeah, no, but at the same time, if he was calling the shots, he would not be facing Baron Corbin at SummerSlam.
No, I just mean, like, in story. He's coming out to open the show just to be like, hey, so I lost, but I'm John Cena, so I'm still
like,
in charge of things.
John Cena, I mean, I can't believe that I'm arguing for this. I can't believe that it's got to this stage. But John Cena is a Steve Austin or a Hulk Hogan or a Rock, and he shouldn't be fucking losing all the time. He should only lose once in a blue moon when it means something.
I mean, it should definitely mean something. I agree with you there. And I like the idea that John Cena is willing to work with younger talent right now and willing to put over younger talent. I like that a lot. I like the fact that he lost to Nakamura clean. I like that there weren't shenanigans.
That's the guy he should have lost to, though. That's the guy. Not Corbyn.
Not Baron Corbyn. Like, and I agree with you on that. Like, because I don't think that Baron Corbyn is a capable enough performer to be elevated by this, right? Like, I mean, he has money in the bank right now. How much has he done with that to make himself seem interesting? And again, I say part of the problem with money in the bank is that the title right now is on Jinder Mahal, and that hurts the money in the bank concept, because it's like nobody's even really bothering with Jinder Mahal, because they're like, whatever, he will be champion until he's not anymore. It seems like an inevitability, and that hurts storytelling, I think. So the whole main event scene is basically just a shambles right now. But John Cena, Baron Corbin, I guess to summarize this part of the show, like, it's not a match that I'm really looking forward to. I hope they surprise us, but if John Cena isn't super invested in it, and Baron Corbin's not really good enough to carry a match, I don't know. It's just, it leaves me feeling a bit flat about the whole thing.
I'm with you. But let us know how you feel. I'm intrigued. Let us know on the community or on Twitter or whatever. Just like, let us know. What do you think? Should Baron Corbin beat John Cena? Is that what would help? What would you like to see John Cena doing? Because I feel like he's underutilized right now. Not with the Nakamura thing. The Nakamura thing was great, but I think that in terms of the rest of what he's doing, like, I think they're wasting John Cena, quite honestly.
Yeah, it seems like they want to use him to help build new stars at the moment, but they're not really even doing that. So it doesn't seem like he's being used to his full potential, for sure.
So we go from there to the Usos coming out. They've got a tag team match against Sami Zayn and Ty Dillinger, who get a big response from the crowd. Match goes about 7 minutes, and in the end, Ty Dillinger gets a shot to the back of his knee, and then Jimmy applies the tequila sunrise, they call it?
I think so.
For the tap out win. The Usos get the win. Then they said they'd be the champions at SummerSlam. When the New Day's music hits, Big E does the entrance, comes out, and from behind, Xavier Woods and Kofi Kingston jump the Usos, grab some chairs. They're about to smash the Usos with the chairs when Jay manages to save Jimmy and they bail up the ramp. And we get a very serious side of the New Day, which I'm a big, big fan of. And this program's just really good, really strong. And this, I've heard rumors that this might be pre-showed. No.
No, this should not be pre-showed at all. I will take umbrage with that. Like, I will be so
put the fucking cruiserweights in the pre-show, or put the SmackDown women on the pre-show. Put something else in the pre-show. Do not put this on there.
This should not be on the pre-show. I don't think the women should be on the pre-show either.
But if you need to put two matches, if you need to put two on there, this is with 100% not one of the ones to do with.
No, like, this is the best going into SummerSlam on SmackDown.
Let's play a game. Okay, so there are 11 matches for SummerSlam. Try and pick three that you think will be in contention to be in the pre-show. There'll definitely be two, but pick three that you think it'll be two of these three, okay?
The cruiserweights.
Okay.
So
at the moment, he did 11 matches.
What's the card? Because I don't actually know.
Raw Women's, Alexa and Sasha, Cena Corbin, Balor Wyatt, Big Show Cass, Orton Rusev, Neville Tozawa.
Big Show Cass, come on. Why would that be on the main show?
New Day, Usos, AJ, Kevin Owens, Naomi, Natalia, Jinder, Nakamura, Lesnar, Reigns, Braun, and Joe. I think with Enzo suspended above the cage, I don't think they put that in the pre-show.
Ugh, that's right, the shark cage thing. I mean, I don't know. I don't like having to pick pre-show. The cruiserweights are like the biggest thing that I can always think of because it's
they
stuff
better
I don't
not be
watch,
in the main
right?
show. Come on.
Like, I mean, I like and it sucks for the cruiserweights teams, because but... I love Adrian Neville and I think him being king of the cruiserweights is awesome. Like, I love him.
He can be king of the cruiserweights in the pre-show.
Yeah. I mean, it just sucks, right? Like, it sucks that it's kind of relegated to that. I don't want to see the SmackDown women on the pre-show because I really don't like that. I don't like that the representation of, you know, an entire portion of the population just kind of keeps getting moved to the pre-show or keeps getting its time cut. That's frustrating to me, especially if it's like the SmackDown Women's Championship is more prestigious than the WWE Championship at this point. So, I mean,
yeah,
put Nakamura and Jinder on
yeah.
the pre-show, take right?
On, like, yeah. Why not? Well, anyway, so the Usos and the New Day, the program's heating up. And hopefully they don't end up in the pre-show. But I enjoyed the segment this week.
No, it was a great segment. And I really, there's just something that makes my heart smile about seeing Sami Zayn and Ty Dillinger tag together. Like, I love it. I love them so much. I know that it's a makeshift thing and people were like, oh, Sammy deserves better than this. And you know what? I don't think this is like a lasting tag team. If it ended up being a lasting tag team and it becomes as awesome as like Sheamus and Cesaro did, I'm not against it, because if it's tagging with Ty Dillinger and doing cool things in the tag division versus doing nothing with Mike Kanellis, then I pick doing cool things in the tag division, right? Like, have another tag story. But I don't think this is a lasting thing. It just, I love them both so much. And I forget who it was on Twitter, so I apologize, but someone said, wouldn't it be great if Sammy was trying to convince Ty to be his tag team partner forever, and we had vignettes about like friendship and stuff. And I really just want to see that, because I think it'd be super fun. If they're half as fun as that Sonic commercial the two of them did together, that's kind of something I want to see. But I think this match was just a really good example of how good the Usos are, because they're just sort of under the radar, some of the best performers in WWE right now, right? And they keep killing it. Their new music is amazing. Baron Corbin's new music is shite, but I love the new Uso theme that we've had for a couple of weeks. And they're just, I don't know, the Usos are really, really good at tag team wrestling. And they've been a tag team for such a long time. And I like getting to display that against two guys who are also very, very capable, right? Like, they're not just putting them against the Ascension again. The Ascension have better things to do on Fashion Peaks. But seeing Ty Dillinger get like a hometown crowd welcome to, because he's from Hamilton, I think, which isn't too far from Toronto. So, I don't know. It made me happy. And then I love Angry New Day, like the Angry New Day coming out to attack the Usos. Like, normally I'm not a huge fan of baby faces attacking the heels, just because I'm like, you're supposed to be the good guys, but this is retribution, like direct retribution for getting attacked last week by the Usos during their entrance, right? So the sneak attack kind of makes sense, and it makes sense that the New Day would be pissed at the Usos right now. And I like the New Day taking the Usos seriously, because the New Day sometimes, I think when they're least effective is when they get too jokey and don't react to things and don't take situations seriously, kind of similar to John Cena in a way, actually. Wacky New Day can be really super fun, but it can also devalue the story and take me out of the conflict sometimes. So I like seeing that anger and that fire and realizing that there's an actual conflict here and I want to see them fight.
We go from there to Renee Young talking to Randy Orton about Rusev and Jinder. Talks about Rusev at SummerSlam, says he's going to beat Jinder tonight. Very generic promo. Cuts us into the Fashion Peaks. Wait, how the fuck do you describe this? So Tyler Breeze is talking to the Ascension about the crazy dream he had last week, talking about how they had a log with maple syrup. They're there for the free pie. They don't care who attacked Fandango. Breeze is staring at a mirror saying, where's Dango? Where's Dango? And then Dango's behind him in the mirror. He turns around asking what happened to him. He's all dazed, and then he has a drink of coffee, spits it out. So it's a damn fine cup of coffee. Says he was with aliens and with anal probes, and he could have left anytime he wanted. And then he said,
no, he said anal probes. I mean, wardrobes. I mean, you can tell he's very dazed from this alien situation.
He can see into the future. And Tyler asked him to prove it, and he said he's got the clear, the power of clear, the power to see things in the future. And he says the next person that walks into the room is the person who destroyed Tully the horse. And of course, Arn Anderson is the man who walks in next looking for catering. Arn and Tully, the Brainbusters, back in the day, in case anybody didn't get that reference. Tyler Breeze asked if he was the one that destroyed Tully the horse. He said, you're damn right. And they should have named Arn, because anyone with sense was he was the hoss of that group. And then he grabbed two donuts, said he was taking them with him. And Fandango says, their case is just beginning. This gets more and more bonkers every single week.
And I love it. I love all of this, Kenny. I mean, Tyler Breeze looking at Fandango and saying, please don't tell me it's going to take 18 episodes to get you back to normal. Like,
we're never going to find out who did this. We're never going to find out.
I don't even care. Like, I want this to continue as long as possible. I mean, eventually there should be some sort of reveal, but like, I'm not clamoring for it. Like, I really want to know who it is, but I also really don't want these segments to end, because they're so good. They're so spot on too. Like, every genre that they've done, I think they've done so well. I think that it really speaks to Tyler Breeze and Fandango are really good performers. Like, they're actually funny. They're not just like funny for wrestling. They're actually really funny and really good at this. And whoever's doing these vignettes with them, like whoever's writing them and
they're
involved
excellent.
In the whole
they're
process, they're so good. And the cork boards just keep getting better and better too. Like, I mean, I don't know, just all of the details in the office and the setup. You can tell the performers are having a blast with this, right? I mean, this is far and away the best thing the Ascension has ever done, ever.
I mean, the bar's not high, but yeah, it's very good fun, and every week it's the highlight, one of the highlights of the show. And yeah, I'm just glad that they took what was a shite gimmick and made it into something really fun.
Yeah,
good for them.
It's escalated organically as well, which makes me happy. And if you're not watching SmackDown and if you're only listening to these, the fashion files are always on YouTube, like within the hour of SmackDown ending. So make sure you're watching these vignettes because they are like the highlight of my week. I love them.
From one thing that used to be shite to one thing that still is shite, Lana has a match. She told Tamina last week that she was going to challenge Charlotte. So it's Charlotte versus Lana. It goes about 2 minutes. Charlotte beats her very, very easily. And Charlotte celebrates as Lana is helped by trainers after she had to tap out to the figure eight. Very quick loss. I'll just jump in now and say that later on, Tamina approaches Lana and I almost pissed myself from laughing where Tamina says, "You're never going to be the wrestler that I am."
I know. The bar's not
hell.
High, love.
Jesus Christ. And Lana says that she'll never be as ravishing as she is. And who gives a fuck? Who gives an actual fuck about these two? Jesus Christ.
I'm kind of intrigued with what they're doing.
Why?
Though. Because I think it's interesting.
No, it's not. Where is it going to go? It's going to lead to them.
Don't tell me what I find interesting, Kenny McIntosh. I do find it kind of interesting.
It's going to lead to a Tamina versus fucking Lana match.
I'm trying not to think about that. No, I don't want Tamina versus Lana.
That's what it's going to end with. How can that be?
No, I know that. But are you done?
I'm just saying, Tamina versus Lana, that's the end.
I know. But what I like about this, what I like about what they're doing is that they're telling a different kind of story. It's not. Well, but I like that it's, there's something about it that sort of intrigues me. It actually makes me feel a little bit bad for Lana, which I think is what they're trying to go for here. And it's a kind of working, like Lana trying to challenge people who are clearly better than her. I like the fact that they're like, she's not good. You know what story we're going to tell? She's not good,
but I'll tell you this.
But she's hot and she keeps getting opportunity. And I find that kind of intriguing. Just like, I like the fact that Charlotte in this match didn't take Lana seriously because there was no reason to, right? And I mean, commentary is even, they're telling the Eva Marie story with Lana. They're not telling it as well as they did with Eva Marie, but they're telling the Eva Marie story with Lana. And that's a story I kind of wanted to see play out, right? Like when Eva was around. And I think it's kind of, I don't know, there's just something about it that does kind of intrigue me a little bit. As a lower card story, I don't think it should be anywhere near the title picture. When Tamina said that she was going to go for the title, you know, Lana's had opportunities, and now Tamina's going to go for it, that's not something I want to see at all. But I think that's part of the issue with the women's division being so small is that we don't often get lower card stories in the women's division, right? Like, they want everyone to be presented as equal, but that's not how divisions work. You know, you don't have the Ascension going for the tag titles right now. I mean, I say this on SmackDown where Jinder Mahal is the world champion, so I realize that my logic is flawed, but there should be kind of a hierarchy on a card, right? And Lana and Tamina as a lower card story is fine. It would be better, and I stand by this, like, I think I said last week, this would be way more compelling if Tamina were actually good, right? Because I can't believe that Lana, even as neurotic and dumb as she is sometimes, right? Like, Lana has to watch this show every once in a while, and she's picking Tamina as the person to emulate because she's like, you're such a good wrestler. You're such a superstar. I want to be like you. Like, you're the one that I really want, that I admire and all this stuff. And it's like, really? Out of everyone on this show, you picked Tamina.
I just think if people want women's wrestling to thrive, this is 200 steps back. Hundreds. The division, women's wrestling is not in a strong enough state to handle this. This is bad for women's wrestling. If people want more women's wrestling on television, you should not want this to be on TV, because this is going to turn people off. It's going to make people not want to see it. It's going to make people not want to see women's wrestling. It is a bad thing for women's wrestling. It's a terrible, terrible, terrible depiction of women's wrestling. And women's wrestling is still needs so much work to be taken as seriously as men's wrestling to some wrestling fans. And this is not what needs to be on TV right now.
No, I don't think it's a great story.
Neither of them should be in the main roster. Neither of them should be anywhere near a wrestling ring. Nowhere near a professional wrestling ring.
Well, I don't think that's fair. I think saying that they shouldn't be anywhere near a professional wrestling ring is not...
Having matches. They should not be having matches. They're terrible.
Well, I mean, the only way that Lana's going to get better at wrestling is to wrestle.
You know where she should maybe go then? NXT.
Yes, I agree with that. Like, I 100% agree with that. I don't think this should be happening on the main roster. I think this should be happening in NXT. I think it happening on the main roster is just because Lana's already a star, and that's what they're doing, right? Lana apparently does have some appeal to people. I mean, I know you and I don't like her because we've seen her on Total Divas and we're not fans, but apparently, I mean, she was getting a really good reaction from the crowd. Like, people still want to see Lana for some reason, and maybe they're just trying to capitalize on that. I don't think it's great. I wish this were happening in NXT where she could develop and learn and grow more. Because I don't think that Lana is, like, a hopeless case. I think that if Lana had a couple years in NXT to really, like, train and only train and, you know, do the NXT thing for a long time, I think she could probably do okay. I mean, we don't know, right? Like, that takes years to find out. But I think she's done a disservice by just being thrown out there. But if she's going to just be thrown out there, I'm glad the story feels authentic, because the story is that she's thrown out there too soon and she's not very good, but she has ambition. So they're just kind of trying to go with that. It's not something that I'm saying is like my favorite story. I sound like I'm like super in Lana's corner. I'm really, really not. But I think just to say that it's not compelling at all or intriguing to anybody, like, it is kind of intriguing to me, almost just from a social experiment point of view, just to see what they end up doing with it. But it's not like the end result of Lana versus Tamina. No, that's not something that I'm excited about at all. Tamina being anywhere near the women's title, I think, is a travesty, because I think she's terrible, right? Like, she's fine as a presence to, like, stand there. I don't know why she doesn't have a jacket that fits her. She seems very uncomfortable in the jacket that's too small. It's just, to me, that's not good. And I wish that there were someone in this position who was actually good that could be, you know, Lana's mentor or the person who's trying to save Lana or something. I wish it was someone else in that position, because Tamina's just awful.
I think they both are, but, you know, we'll see how it goes. Shane McMahon is out next for his rules of engagement for being a referee. I'm so glad Shane never adhered to that stupid fucking title. Rules of engagement, my god. So Shane comes out.
I forgot that was even the title of this segment. Was that what this was?
Well, that was what they advertised as. Shane never said that at any point.
That's funny.
He brings out Kevin Owens and AJ Styles. Talks about, you know, just wanting to get everything clear. Owens apologizes to Shane. And they said, but, you know, he's not worried about Shane screwing over because McMahon's have already done that to Legendary Canadian before, and it'd be terrible PR to do it again.
Kevin Owens is the best, isn't he? Like,
he's delightful. And then he says, the other one deserved it, which is a great line. Mm-hmm.
I mean, the crowd kept chanting at Shane, you screwed Brett, you screwed... No, he didn't. Like, Shane McMahon did not screw Bret Hart. Like, just nope. Like, I think they chanted it at John Cena as well. And it's like, no, John Cena did not screw Bret Hart either.
So then
chanting at
Kevin Owens starts stirring the pot. He shows footage of AJ attacking Shane, saying that AJ's got stuff to worry about. Then he says that, you know, McMahon's have got a history, and then he fucking ruins our retro Raw timeline.
What a heel.
And shows Shane McMahon screwing over Steve Austin at Survivor Series 98. He says there's a...
I'll probably forget about it by 98, right?
The good thing is there's other twists on that show that even if you know that one, you don't. It still leaves you other twists. So
I think I know about Survivor Series 98, though. Isn't that the tournament?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then he says there's enough on the network to make a collection out of Shane screwing over wrestlers, which is great. Shane interjects and said he's committed to calling the match right down the middle and asks that neither of them give him a reason to get involved. AJ said, let's not wait to SummerSlam. Let's move it to Shane out of the way and do it right now. Owens said he'd rather win the US title in the US in a city that matters. And then Owens takes a cheap shot at AJ. AJ tries to retaliate, but he does the Pele kick and it hits Shane instead of Kevin Owens. Owens leaves and laughs as there is tension between Shane and AJ. What did you think of this segment to build SummerSlam?
This was excellent. I was not looking forward to AJ Styles versus Kevin Owens again at all. Like, at all. And this segment absolutely turned me around on it. I think bringing in the history, and because I'm not a big fan of guest referees. I know you love guest refereeing as a gimmick, right? you're all about it. I never am, because I'd rather the story be about the two performers most of the time. And sometimes I feel like guest referees just kind of take away from it or become too much the focus of something. But for this story, which we've seen AJ Styles, Kevin Owens so many times, it kind of needs a different focus. And I mean, ultimately what I want from a referee is someone who's going to call it down the middle. But for some reason, Shane being there with the two of them, with the history between Shane and AJ especially being brought into it, it does make it more compelling for me. Like, you kind of going into it, you think, oh, Shane and Kevin Owens are having all this tension, so is he going to be fair to him? Da, 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 da. But I like Kevin Owens bringing up the fact that, like, yeah, AJ Styles attacked Shane McMahon in his car. And I love him pointing to the WWE Network as a place to see Shane McMahon shenanigans too. It's like Kevin Owens has actually paid attention to the programming and is rewarding you for paying attention, right? Like, hey, sometimes the details matter. There's continuity, and I love it. So this segment was excellent. It makes me want to see the match way more. It makes me curious to know how Shane is going to get involved or not, because, you know, is AJ going to attack Shane? Is Kevin going to attack Shane? Is there just all of the shenanigans? It seems like there's a lot more possibility for this match to be more exciting than the previous ones, I guess. And that's coming from me, who I normally don't like guest referees, but this one's working for me.
Yeah, it's interesting. I still don't love the match. It's still not what I would love to see both of them doing, but I think it's far more interesting with Shane involved. Owens is very clever for trying to stir the pot and bringing up what Shane did to AJ and Shane's past. And I like Shane because he said, you know, don't give me a reason to get involved. I don't want to get involved here. I want to just call it down the middle. And the reason of Shane being a referee is because the officiating has been 1997 levels of bad.
Yes.
So, yeah, it was a really good segment, really strong, and arguably the best part of the show. One of, anyway.
One of, for sure. I mean, Fashion Peaks is still the best, but...
But for a real-life storyline that's leading to a SummerSlam match, this was
It was very, very good. And I like the tension between AJ and Shane kind of coming back, too. Like, AJ
That's
saying,
what would happen, though, you know, because when they kind of, like, buried the hatchet. They still didn't like each other, but they kind of respected each other for what they went through. So that was
it was like a mutual respect thing. And I mean, AJ had some line in there, I can't remember what it was, but Shane said, you know, don't give me a reason to get involved. And did AJ say, oh, well, if you do, then we'll just have happen what happened at WrestleMania again or something. Mm-hmm. I don't remember how exactly he said it, but it was like, oh, burn, yes,
it was
indeed.
Strong. We then have Naomi versus Carmella. It's fine. There's nothing special about it. It's just kind of average match. It goes about 5 minutes, but it was fine for what it was. And in the end, they were sort of fighting for position until the referee sort of took Carmella away for hair pulling, and the referee was distracted long enough to allow James Ellsworth to return from under the ring, causing Naomi to slip. Carmella hits a super kick, gets the 1-2-3, and Carmella and James Ellsworth celebrated up the ramp. I hate myself that I kind of liked seeing him again. But I think he's been far more effective in this role with Carmella, and I think him being back is going to be fun for her and give her more ways to be just awful and and annoying. So I'm glad to see him back, and I think that Carmella probably needed the win just to give it a little bit of steam, and Naomi didn't really lose anything because, you know, she was distracted by a man shoving her from the top. So, you know, it wasn't like she just lost. So, yeah, I thought it was a decent angle.
Yeah, I was wondering during this match, actually, because Carmella is wearing her amazing money tights and the free Ellsworth shirt, right? Which I love that. I love that detail. And I was wondering, I was like, it has to be close to a month, right? That since Ellsworth got suspended.
Must
I was like,
be,
when is that going to be up? And I was about to Google it, actually, when James Ellsworth appeared. And I was like, oh, okay, apparently the suspension is up, because, you know, he wasn't going to show his face and risk Carmella having to forfeit her Money in the Bank briefcase, because that was the stipulation that Daniel Bryan set forth. No, I loved seeing James Ellsworth come back again. I like him with Carmella a lot. I think he's super effective at being so annoying, right? Like, he's just the worst, and in the best possible way. And the thing that a lot of people were saying on Twitter, and I kind of have to agree, although, I mean, like, the timing wasn't necessarily there, but why didn't Carmella cash in here?
I mean, I think the thing with cash-ins is that if you use logic, then there's problems. Because,
yeah
if you use logic, there's problems, because you can always bring those things. It's like, when we were talking about SummerSlam 97 on Patreon, you had some real issues with the cage match with Mankind, Hunter Hearst Helmsley. And I think that's just something in wrestling that, like, I think if you focus on that kind of stuff all the time, it's going to be very hard to keep all that realistic. I'm okay with it. I think it was more problematic when she didn't cash in the night of Money in the Bank. Because then it would have been a great story for, like, well, she cashes in, so they can't really take the briefcase off her because she's used it.
Mm-hmm.
So that would have been a cool twist on that. But, yeah, I mean, I get why people bring it up as well.
Yeah, and I guess I can sort of excuse it because in the moment with Naomi, like, being down and, getting super kicked, if Carmella would have taken that extra time to hand the briefcase to the referee, Naomi might have been able to get up. So maybe it's just part of Carmella, and maybe she wants to hold on to the briefcase a little longer. Like, maybe this wasn't her opportune moment. So I guess, I can kind of excuse it, but I understand why people were bringing it up. But yeah, I don't always love seeing the champion get pinned, but this worked for me because of the distraction and because of all of, the dastardly stuff going on with Ellsworth and Carmella. And I like seeing Carmella actually win a match holding the Money in the Bank briefcase. Like, is she one of the best booked Money in the Bank briefcase holders in recent history? Because I kind of think she is.
Yeah, I think she is.
Because normally, like Baron Corbin, for instance, like, he lost to Shinsuke Nakamura. Like, who cares about Baron Corbin, right? It seems like a lot of times people hold the briefcase and they just have to lose constantly because they hold the briefcase. So they want it to be like a major surprise when this loser becomes champion. And I don't really understand why that's always the logic. I like Carmella just being like a snivelly dick about everything.
It was good. She goes backstage with Ellsworth to celebrate. And then Natalia turns up for just some atrocious acting to throw in there.
And Ellsworth versus Natalia in an acting competition. I mean, oh boy.
Ellsworth would win. Natalia tells them they better stay out of her business at SummerSlam. Carmella asks her what's she so worried about and points to the briefcase, and Ellsworth wishes her good luck and sarcastically talks about they're really counting on you to win. God, I mean, Natalia, she's had all this chance, being put in this position to just cut a good promo. And
nope.
She's just not done anything. So, while I wouldn't be like, oh, I hope this match gets pre-showed at SummerSlam, I really hope it doesn't. But if it does, I think part of the blame will definitely go to Natalia, because Naomi's done a lot to try and make herself stand out as champion. I know some people really don't like, the glow in the dark belt and the whole gimmick to entrance and all that sort of thing. I like it a lot.
I love it personally.
But I think whether you like it or you don't, you got to admit at least she's made a fucking effort. At least she's like done something and she's improved in the ring in the last 12 months. Natalia's not done a lot, and if this match gets pre-showed, I think Natalia is the finger to blame.
I think if this match were Charlotte versus Naomi, there's no way it would be on the pre-show.
No chance.
I think Natalia versus Naomi actually does have a good chance of going on the pre-show, and I think that's unfortunate. I still think Natalia is the wrong choice here. And that's not just because I'm like, the four horsewomen have to be everything, but Charlotte is better than Natalia. Natalia is not charismatic.
I was willing to give this a chance because they were going in a different direction. And Natalia has, in the past, proven that she can be a good wrestler. But she's just done nothing in this program. And
you're always the one to say, being a good wrestler isn't enough.
Yeah, but had she stepped up, she had the chance to step up, and she didn't do it. So
she's had chances to step up so many times, and I just haven't seen it. So it's, and I don't think she's bad. I think she is a fine lower mid-card wrestler who is very good at wrestling and can put on good matches, but I don't think Natalia belongs in the main event.
I don't know if we can get on SummerSlam or in the main event. Renee Young sits down to speak to Shinsuke Nakamura, and in one of the most depressing things ever, he says he's always wanted to be in WWE for his whole career to compete with the best in the world. He's going to SummerSlam to face Jinder fucking Mahal.
What a world we live in.
What a fucking joke this company is. One absolute joke. This is horrendous. That he has.
I mean,
it
is what it is right now. Like, we need to get past the Jinder Mahal situation so that we don't keep having this conversation. Like, I'm so tired of this.
It's just having to hear Nakamura, who's fucking headlined the Tokyo Dome, having to spout about competing the best in the world, then being stuck with that steroided tit. Jesus
Christ. I mean, I just assume he was talking about John Cena last week. In my head. That's how that line went.
Who were they battling to fight is the issue.
Oh, I know. I know. I have to do this cognitive dissonance thing in my head right now, right? Where, yes, Shinsuke Nakamura is going to face Jinder Mahal, but Shinsuke Nakamura is fighting for the WWE Championship. I have to look at it as Shinsuke Nakamura is going for the WWE Championship, not Shinsuke Nakamura is going for a chance to face Jinder Mahal. Like, Jinder Mahal is just the unfortunate sack of shit that currently holds the belt, right? But if the belt can be removed from the sack of shit. No, I'm getting so tired of this conversation that I'm just angry about having to have it every single week. And it needs to be done. Like,
it's bad enough that he's champion, right? I could shut up about the conversation if he was just champion, it was a mid-card thing and that was it. But it's this whole, like, they're trying to make out like he's the top of the fucking mountain.
Pish. Yeah, and he's not. He's not.
Renee talks about gender and says, you know, and then Nakamura says, SummerSlam, he'd fulfill his destiny and become champion. The Nakamura dynasty would begin. I really hope he beats him. I can't explain how much I hope he beats him. If his first WWE main roster loss is to that fucking big steroided Canadian fake Indian shitey Punjabi prison, can't really speak Punjabi and look at a fucking camera properly, turban wearing back acne prick, I will be very unpleased. Very, very unpleased. What a sack of shit he is. He's so fucking terrible, Sandra. He's so fucking bad. He can't wrestle very well. He can't cut a promo well. He's so fucking shit. I'm so over it. I'm so over it. It's not even funny anymore.
No, it's not funny anymore. It's tiring is what it is. It's inevitable. It's worse. I don't know. What's worse? Roman Reigns winning the Royal Rumble and going on to main event WrestleMania against Hunter Hurst Helmsley.
Oh, that was fine compared to this. That was fucking...
Jinder Mahal as world champion. Like, Roman Reigns was a better idea.
Roman and Triple H was SummerSlam 89 compared to this.
Right?
Jesus Christ.
It's so unfortunate.
What's more unfortunate is you go, okay, I had to listen to Shinsuke Nakamura with a straight face because say he's competing in the best in the world, so I have to go to SummerSlam face this prick. And then the main event's another Randy Orton and Jinder Mahal grudge match. Oh,
I know, God. Right? I know. Oh, what even is a grudge match? Like, it's not a thing. It's just, like, a match.
I do understand that they kind of go, I mean, we should really let Randy beat him since Randy's an actual star.
But the problem with letting Randy beat him is that now, doesn't it look like the feud should continue because he has a win over the fucking champion? And I don't want it to continue. I don't want it to continue at all.
Do you know what I wouldn't be against? What I really wouldn't be against is I wouldn't be against Nakamura winning the belt and then Orton coming up to congratulating him and turning heel on Nakamura. That'd be good. I'd like that. Give me something like that. And then can we just like send Jinder Mahal to Global Force Wrestling? Just put him there so I don't ever need to watch him again.
Can Jinder Mahal go wherever Dolph Ziggler's been? Because that's been pleasant.
Oh, that's been lovely, hasn't it? Oh,
it really has.
What a wee holiday I've had.
Like, once in a while, I realize Dolph Ziggler hasn't been on the show in a really long time. And then I'm like, haven't missed him at all. You know who I miss? Luke fucking Harper. Where's he? Apparently he was in the dark match.
He's wearing a Sin
Cara
mask on Twitter.
Getting great reactions from Toronto.
Did you not see him with a Sin Cara mask on Twitter?
I did see him in a Sin Cara mask on Twitter, and I just don't know how to feel about it. Like,
bad.
It's not great. Like, I want him to be on television. I don't want him.
You know what? You having the fucking Sin Cara mask on is like you having a fucking picture with a pedo with a wee sweetie bag. It's bad.
I mean, I'm just saying, like, the Sin Cara mask I maintain is like cursed because Sin Cara has not worked out, and it's been
Sin Cara versus
performers.
Sin Cara. Do you remember that?
Yeah, Jesus I do remember Christ. Sin Cara versus Sin Cara.
God. Anyway.
And then the funny part is that the guy who lost that match ended up becoming Sin Cara anyway, so whatever.
Wrestling. The other thing is, very quickly, so you know how Global Force Wrestling are doing that thing where they're doing the Amped anthology thing where they're basically putting their 2015 TV shows like on pay-per-view?
Oh, I didn't, but sure.
And they are showing guys like Bobby Roode and Curt Hawkins as if they're currently in Global Force Wrestling.
I mean, I did see the YouTube video of, like, the first 5 minutes of Amped or whatever, and, like, it was bizarre to see Mickie James, Bobby Roode, Curt Hawkins.
But they're genuinely
talking... I believe
talking...
Singh Brothers were in there.
They're talking about as if they're currently there, because that's how desperate they are.
Wow.
Anyway.
I mean, That's just the most global force thing in the world.
Main event time, Randy Orton, Jinder Mahal, goes about 13 minutes. In the end, Randy Orton hits with an RKO because, funnily enough, when you have a one-on-one match with these two, Randy Orton could pretty easily beat him, as we've all known for months.
Strangely enough. I mean, this was fine. This wasn't terrible. But I zoned out, though. Like, I didn't really pay much attention to it.
You mean this wasn't interesting to you?
Shockingly, no.
Shocking.
I mean, this did not feel like it should main event a show. It just didn't for some reason, right?
It's main evented three fucking pay-per-views now.
I know, and it never feels like it should. It didn't main event Money in the Bank, to be fair. But
oh, good. Yeah, that's good.
It's Randy Orton versus Jinder Mahal. Randy Orton wins. I don't like Randy Orton and Jinder Mahal having a match that I have to watch again. I don't like Randy Orton winning things. I don't like Randy Orton winning over the champion because now it seems like they need to have another title match. And oh my fucking goodness, do I not want to see them fight again ever in my life. Can it just be done? Can it please just be done?
I wish I could go back to Backlash Sondra, who was trying to be all perky about this.
I was trying to give it a chance.
And she was like, come on, Kenny, you never know. Yes, you do, Sondra. Sometimes you just know.
You do. Well, and I maintain that this is still, I would still rather have Jinder Mahal as champion than Randy Orton. I maintain. I don't like him. I think he's terrible, but
he's not as terrible as Jinder Mahal. Come on.
Jinder Mahal is terrible.
Okay. I thought you meant that Randy Orton was more terrible. I was like, I mean, he's boring, but he's not terrible.
No, he's more boring, and I think they need to separate Jinder and Randy and do something else. Like, I want Jinder and Shinsuke to actually interact or something. Like,
who was it that Ziggler feuded with for ages?
Baron Corbin?
Was it them and they kept having matches and it was like, why are they wrestling again?
On every single pre-show forever? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's also that's the thing with Dolph Ziggler though, is that he tends to get into these like cycle feuds, right? Like he really is kind of like the Hunter Hearst Helmsley of now. Because on Retro Raw, I mean, oh boy, do I not want to see another Hunter Hearst Gold Dust match ever. And now Hunter Hearst Helmsley and Mankind are fighting forever. Or why? I don't know. And Dolph Ziggler has that same kind of repetition, right? I mean, Dolph Ziggler, or are you talking about like Dolph Ziggler and Kofi Kingston back in the day that they always show on Sky Sports after SmackDown's done?
Oh, I forgot about that.
I mean, they're best of like hundreds of matches.
Anyway, so Randy Orton wins, RKO, sadly didn't win the title and send Jinder Mahal back to main event. But Randy Orton goes up the ramp as if the show is going off the air. We get the graphic of it leaving. And then as he turns around to leave, Rusev hits him with a super kick from behind as the show fades to black. Nice surprise ending with Rusev getting a little bit of heat over Randy. And, I think they might have a surprisingly good match at SummerSlam. You know, I think that Rusev's the kind of guy that could have a good match with Orton. And I think Orton will attempt to show some fire because he's not being put in the top spot.
I hope it's one of those situations where he wants to prove himself because he knows people are saying that, you know, oh, this match isn't going to matter or people aren't really into him. And I mean, I think you brought up the Randy Orton Sheamus match, right? When they actually kind of pulled something great out of the bag because people were just like, why is this happening? We don't want to see it. And it ended up being really good. I hope it's one of those situations. I mean, I've no doubt that Rusev can put on a good match with Randy Orton. I have no doubt that Randy Orton, when motivated, could put on a good match with Rusev. So I hope that's what happens.
Me too. Where's your thumb for this episode of SmackDown?
Thumbs in the middle on this one. I didn't think it was terrible or anything. I mean, like, the main event was dire, right? But most of the stuff, it was pretty easy to watch. I didn't get super bored during the show, but it's, I don't know, middling to down maybe. But Fashion Peaks was so good, and the Uso stuff was so good, and I don't know. Like, and the AJ Kevin Owens stuff was excellent as well. So I think it's a thumbs in the middle.
I'm going to go thumbs down for this show. There was stuff that I liked. Like, I really enjoyed the Usos and New Day stuff, and I really liked Fashion Peaks, and I really liked the Shane, AJ, Kevin Owens stuff. But I think the problem for me was that the main threads of these shows is just really boring stuff. Like, Cena and Corbin, I don't think is interesting. I don't think it's going to be very good. I don't think it's very compelling. So that's not very good. I think the Lana and Tamina stuff is the worst main roster women's stuff in years.
Worse than Alexa Bayley?
Yeah, I think it's far worse. Because Alexa Bayley, even though the content was bad, the wrestlers were good. I don't think it, like, I genuinely think that Lana and Tamina hurts women's wrestling. Hurts the portrayal of women's wrestling. Which is why I have such a problem with it. And then I think that the gender stuff is just becoming a noose around the neck of SmackDown. You know, there's people who don't watch SmackDown anymore because of them. Or because mm-hmm. of various points. And I think that's a real thing. Like, some people just don't watch it. I mean, I know that the ratings have kept up for the most part, but I know a fair few people who don't watch SmackDown anymore. Because they're just like, why would I bother if he's the fucking champion? Because it's not realistic in any way. Nobody believes it. It's, you know, it's just not very believable. So, this one's a thumbs down for me, even though there was stuff that I enjoyed.
It makes me long for the days of Roman Reigns being shoved down our throats. At least he was good.
I know, at least he had a good matches. Sondra, where can people find you on Twitter if they want to agree with you or disagree with you or do anything in between?
Find me on Twitter at Sondra Ruth RW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. And follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. If you want to hear a bunch of bonus content, including pay-per-view reviews, retro pay-per-view reviews, new Yellow Ropes Forever is a new thing at the $7 level on Patreon. Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. Tons of stuff going up there all the time. Yeah, so check us out there as well. Thank you to everyone who already subscribes and who's already supported us. You kind of help us do what we do. So we're incredibly grateful.
Thank you very much. And I really hope that post SummerSlam that I am more perky on this show. I know sometimes you probably prefer that I'm not perky because you like me just ranting about stuff. But I'd like to enjoy SmackDown again. I'd like to feel like it's not an abyss of a hole. But
that'd be lovely.
It just feels like it right now. But it feels like SummerSlam, we might turn a corner. Or I might hire someone else to do this with Sondra. One of those. Can you imagine? Just like, Kenny has decided to no longer do SmackDown.
Kenny's just decided, you know, no more.
No more gender. No. I don't
want. I mean, what is it with co-hosts leaving me? I tell you what. Like, I have Bob on the NXT run now and he fucking dies. Robert's supposed to do the SmackDown summary with me. He has to go be a teacher. I mean, don't you leave me too.
I'll do my best.
Just saying, I'm going to have abandonment issues over this.
So we'll be back next week to talk about the go-home show for SummerSlam, because next week is 7 days, 7 podcasts.
Wow, that's next week already. That's crazy. I'm unprepared for this. But that's okay, because we'll make it through.
I'm the one that's got to line up fucking 7 interviews. So fucking look at me try and go. Anyway, thank you for listening, everyone. And the Raw Rundown will be up very soon. David and I will be recording it. Thank you very much for all your support. We very much appreciate it. Go have a good weekend, everybody. Get your hole, have some drinks, eat some food, and just live. And remember that if you train to be a wrestler, you probably could be better than Jinder, or Lana, or Tamina.
Dreams can come true.
Bye.
Bye.
Rusev Udria! Rusev Matka!